Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audio download and a free 30-day trial at www.audibletrial.com/radmetal. Over 150,000 titles to choose for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Do you have a heavy metal-related business? Do you promote concerts? Do you sell t-shirts, music, instruments, alternative lifestyle products? Then come advertise with us. Radioactive Metal is the perfect place to promote your business. Go to advertisecast.com/780 to see all of our advertising options.
Hey, it's Trevor Sternad from the Black Dahlia Murder here and hanging out with Radioactive Metal.
Horns up, metalheads. This is Radioactive Metal, your source for news, views, tunes, and interviews. Here are your hosts, Snowy, Rock, Kareem, and Aaron.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to a murderous episode of Radioactive Metal. This is episode 472, and I'm Snowy White.
This is Rock.
And this is Aaron.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Tired.
It's going good over here.
It's been a long week and a half.
I guess so, and that's the very first thing that I wanted to get to, because anyone who tuned in to last episode will know you kind of had your hands full with everything going on in hurricane season in Florida, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners would be happy to know that, you know, you're alive and well and sustained minimal damage, and, you know, Kareem, who is not with us here tonight, she kind of went through the same thing, but she's doing all right. So, yeah. But we'll let it come out of the horse's mouth. What's the whys and wherefores of your little adventure?
I just want to say that it took a fucking hurricane for me to miss an episode. Okay?
Yeah.
True
yes.
That.
It's the first episode I missed since it's episode 100.
So, yeah, this was definitely it. Yeah. But you know what? It was a little weird, because the whole time, even though I knew, even while Aaron and I, like, we were off and running, even then I was still, for that split second, I'm still waiting to hear your voice.
It was weird.
Yeah, and I gotta say, I listened to the episode on Friday when I released it on the website and on iTunes, and because I was waiting, I wanted to listen to it at the same time as everybody else, and I gotta say, you guys did a great job, and you know.
Well, thank you.
It was weird. Thanks. Not hearing me in there.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah, like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah. Yeah. So like you were saying, we got minimal damage around the house. We have some trim that covers the. The rain gutters, and most of it came down, and a little bit of siding on my shed came off, like one panel, and then I have an awning right above my bedroom window, and that completely came down, so I took the whole thing off, and now I have no awning, but that's pretty much it. Oh. I mean, I cut down a couple tree branches that were making me nervous that were right above my porch. I cut those down myself. They weren't very big, so I was able to do it myself.
Good thinking.
With a handsaw, you know, so, you know, you know, maybe 2-3 inches in diameter at the most. So it was pretty easy to do. And that's pretty much it. So
right on.
We lost power at like Monday morning at like 1 a.m. My neighbor told me, because I was in a hotel in Kissimmee with my family and some friends. And we got our power back Tuesday morning around 8:30 in the morning. So we were maybe 30 hours without power, and our water came back also like a couple of hours later, because, you know, we're in a community and stuff, and they have electric pumps and stuff. And apparently when when the it becomes too full, when the pumps automatically shut off. So then wow. they have to, you know, pump out a little bit of water, and then they can start the pumps again for our daily use of water. So for a few hours, I was using water from my retention pond to flush my toilet.
Oh wow!
You got it. You got to do that.
Yep, I was using that. I was I had a bucket with a rope tied to it, and I would throw it in my retention pond, pull some water out, some dirty brown water, and well, not brown, is like brownish.
Mm-hmm. You know, ugly.
Yeah, there wasn't any dirt in it, but you know, it was pond water. You know, so
any gators?
No, but they seem to be careful right now because there's a lot of wildlife that has been displaced. You know.
Oh, I would think, yeah.
So whether it's gators or snakes, or you know, a lot of snakes probably, you know. So they say right now to really, you know, watch your step and, you know, be vigilant and don't let your animals out without a leash and, you know, stuff like that. You know, so
when the hurricane went through, I think it was Hurricane Harvey when it went through Houston, I saw pictures of a shark swimming down the highway.
Yeah.
Because there's just so much water, like.
Yeah.
Like on the highway, and it's like fucking like this is Sharknado come to life. Like,
I was just gonna say that.
Yeah, pretty much.
This is fucking.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. No.
That's some pretty scary stuff.
Yeah, but we got lucky. Some of people at my work. I mean, today. Okay, we're talking right now. It's Saturday. The hurricane was Monday, so I have some people at work who just got their power back today.
Wow.
So, yeah. I mean, well, we're lucky. I mean, I think I've mentioned this before. I live in a retirement community, you know? So,
oh, okay.
So those are
so the, many jokes.
Those,
so
those,
many
well,
jokes.
Yeah, I don't care because it's quiet and I like it. So, but
get know, those, off my those, lawn.
Those are the types of places that they bring. They try to get the power back up first, you know? So,
there you go.
Because, dude, the grocery store in the strip mall literally next door that I can walk to from here, they don't have power.
Wow.
And they're running on a generator. The store.
Oh,
on a generator, you know?
Well, at least the beer is cold. Good.
Yeah, I mean, I went to get a couple of things the other day, and I see a sign saying, "Oh, due to conserve energy with our generator, you know, we're gonna close tonight at 7 p.m." I'm like, "Holy crap! I thought they had power for real." But
you haven't started yet, have you?
So that was yesterday. So I don't know. I don't know if they got their power back, but hopefully they did. You know, and because I got to go grocery shopping at some point. I have practically nothing. A lot of food got wasted and. You know, I had to throw away a lot of stuff, so. So, yeah.
Well, through it all, unfortunately for you, but I kind of kept it close, that you turn 1 year older through all of that, and we would be remiss if we at least we didn't acknowledge that and said happy birthday to you throughout all this. So, you feel a year older now?
I feel 10 years older.
Oh, I guess
for all this shit.
I guess so.
Oh my god.
Now would kind of be a good time for me to mention that our good buddy Athanar in Midnight, mm-hmm. that we had on earlier this year, for relief effort in Hurricane Harvey, the man has recorded his own rendition of DRI's I Don't Need Society, and it's up on Bandcamp for purchase
right now.
And all proceeds, of course, go to the Red Cross for that. So I'm going to encourage all of our listeners, take a couple bucks out, go and buy this amazing song. You know, like it sounds like Midnight doing a DRI. It sounds exactly what you would think it would sound like.
You know, and like
it's amazing. It's fantastic. So on Bandcamp, please do.
I don't know about you guys, but the irony of this song is kind of hits hard right now. I don't need society, but you know, if you buy the song, if society buys the song, they will give money to relief efforts. So yeah, you do need society. You know what I mean?
Well,
if it wasn't for society, you wouldn't have people helping you in your time of need in a hurricane. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I'm talking to society's outcasts here. I get what you're saying, but no.
I know.
No, we're not part of society.
I know. The irony hit me because, you know, I'm in the middle of all this right now. So, yeah.
Yeah, you're one tough son of a gun.
So.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for everything, for coming on and helping out and everything that you do. It's fantastic. Thank you so much. But shall we get on with things?
We wander the streets living intense metal lives. Find out what we did in The Metal Fix.
Okay, who's got what, when, who did what? Rock and roll.
Amazingly, I do have a little bit of a metal fix this week.
Oh, right on.
Just a few things that I saw. One of them, we've mentioned her on the podcast before, professional wrestler Shayna Baszler.
Mm-hmm.
The most metal pro wrestler out there. Probably.
Mm-hmm.
She was part of the Mae Young Classic, which was a female tournament that the WWE held and all that. And they had the finals. Was it this week or was it last week? I can't remember now. I
think it was this week. Well,
I think they were this week. Well, this past week as we're recording. And you know, we know she's metal. You know, I've tweeted at her and stuff, and she's responded about her favorite band being Machine Head and, you know, how she likes to train listening to Midnight and all that stuff. But this week, she posted a picture on Instagram of herself, and she had quotes, air quotes. She had lyrics from a song, and I'm reading the lyrics, and I like the band, but I'm not familiar with the lyrics at all. But I'm reading the lyrics, and I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, that's pretty metal. And then she quoted, it was a Bolt Thrower song.
Oh yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
And I know she's a fan because she wears Bolt Thrower t-shirts, you know. So, So I thought that was really cool, you know. So I just wanted to mention that because I've said it before, she's the most metal chick in wrestling right now.
And no doubt.
The other thing, Talk Is Jericho. He had Brian Slagle on a few. Maybe a
he time. Did. He did. Yeah, I gave that a spin too.
Yeah, and Brian Slagle talks about his book that he just put out about the history of Metal Blade, and because is it 30 or 35 years now? I can't remember. Probably 35.
It's got to be 35, yeah.
Yeah. So he put out a book. But the thing that I thought interesting, it was a super interesting interview, you know, because I love history, the history of metal and all that. But the interesting thing is that Jericho brought up is Banzai Records.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, that's right. Jericho was in Winnipeg. Of course he knows Banzai Records, you know. And Jericho said, well, you know, it's not mentioned in the book, but, you know, you did have a deal. And they talked a little bit about Banzai Records, you know. But I thought that was interesting. So I wanted to mention, because we often talk about Banzai Records, you know, you and I being Canadian, so.
Oh yeah, been there, done that sure.
Yep. So that was it. That's all I wanted to mention.
Right on. Yeah, and Mr. Jericho in that interview, he also name dropped Records on Wheels.
Yes, the old store in Winnipeg.
The old store that I pretty much lived there.
And you probably were in there at the same time as him many times.
Oh, I'm sure.
You guys just did not know each other.
yeah, unfortunately, but. That's one of the reasons why we got to get him on the show one of these times, mm-hmm. just to, you know.
Oh, and totally unrelated, because we're talking about wrestling. Today on my way home, I stopped by KFC to get some dinner, and I was waiting on my order, and the guy right next to me waiting on his order was an NXT wrestler. And
nice.
Raul Martinez. He's a lucha wrestler. He's Mexican, so he doesn't speak a whole lot of English. But I asked him, are you Raul? He says, yes. And I said, oh, I'm a fan. I shook his hand. I told him, I was at the TV taping a couple of days ago. I said, oh. I was like, thank you. And he said, thank you.
Oh, that's cool.
So that was it. You know, he doesn't speak a whole lot of English. So that was
cool.
You work on your Spanish.
Yeah. I mean, I see NXT wrestlers all the time. I've seen them at Walmart here, at Publix, at, you know, so there's a few that live right here in my neighborhood, I guess. Well, not my retirement neighborhood, but nearby.
I get it.
Because you can't be under 40 and live here, so, you know.
Oh, wow. There's an
well,
nation.
Oh, yeah, there's
I
a nation.
Never,
yeah.
They wouldn't even let me in. I would need another 20 years before I got there.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. Dude.
Some of us behave. Anyway, that's all I had.
What about you, man? What you got?
All right, so I got a lot of stuff. I'm going to try and run through this quick. So first, and I was texting you guys this earlier today, I picked up a Led Zeppelin photo book for $2 at a yard sale.
Nice.
I was so stoked. So my mother-in-law's community here was having a – they were having a yard sale. And we went over to help her, and I'm, you know, checking out what the neighbors had. So one of her neighbors used to own a bookstore, and she's also an author. And she's like, I've got these books that have been in storage. I haven't had time to sell them. I'm just putting them out at used book prices.
Mm-hmm.
So she's like, oh, you might be interested in this one, because I was talking about music. And she pulls out this Led Zeppelin book, turns over the cardboard it came in. 2/1361 Publications put this out.
Yeah, which when you told me that, I was like, well, really? I didn't know they did photo books.
Well, are you familiar with the book they did with Glenn Friedman?
No.
Okay, so that's one of my all-time favorites. It's called Fuck You Heroes. And it basically chronicles, I want to say, like 77 through 83 of like the California skate and hardcore scene.
Oh, okay.
One of my favorite sets of pictures, there's a picture of Ice-T. And man, I don't know if it's like, it might even go to 86, but I think it's like somewhere in the early 80s, he's like skinny as skinny can be. And then like 2 years later, he is the beefy Ice-T that we all came to know.
Yeah. You know?
And so Henry's done a couple different collages like this. And this one is all Ross Halfen's photography, right? And I think it wasn't Ross on, Focus on Metal. Didn't they talk to him, I think?
Maybe, yeah. Could be.
Yeah, and like you see that name bouncing around all
over. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a very famous rock and roll photographer. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, this is all like top quality stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I was tickled. I'm like, oh my goodness, this is put up by 213. It's all a Zeppelin. I know the kind of stuff that Henry likes to put out when he puts stuff out. Mm-hmm. And so I was excited about this. And then I also picked up two more books, like not necessarily metal, but the one is a book from, it was published in 1942, English Poets and Poetry. So I was totally thinking Iron Maiden when I bought it. And then I picked up an edition of Grimm's Fairy Tales from 1917.
Oh,
ooh.
Damn.
Yeah. And $2 each. Like, she let this stuff go cheap.
Wow.
Always check the bargain bin, check the garage sales, everything. One man's dog shit is another man's diamond.
I even asked her, I'm like, are you sure you don't want more money? I'm like, this is some really good stuff you're selling me here.
Yeah, right? What the hell?
Yeah, and then so tying into my Henry Rollins theme, did you guys see a video that went out this week? And Rock, I know you follow the Henry and Heidi podcast. They posted a picture of this on Instagram, Henry with this guy, and I can't remember the guy's name, but he's the shirtless painter.
Yeah, it's a funny or die thing.
Oh my goodness, it's so funny. I start watching the full video today. So you've got Henry's there shirtless, the other guy's there shirtless, and they're just painting and talking. It's like a punk rock Bob Ross, right?
Yeah.
And they're trying to be serious, but they're being ridiculous at the same time. At one point they turn and start painting each other, like literally on each other's bodies. I'm like, oh my goodness. It's so funny. So if you guys haven't seen it, go check that out.
I watched, like, because I saw it was a 30-minute video. I was like, oh, God, I don't have time or the patience to watch this right now. But I was kind of skipping ahead. You know, I would watch a little part. And then I saw where, I guess, the other guy on his canvas, he was painting a picture of Henry as they were talking. Yeah. And then Henry had just a little square in the corner, in the top corner. It looks like, I guess, that was his painting of the guy. I don't know.
Yeah,
because the guy at one point was talking, and he had his brush, and I guess he accidentally put some paint on his own face. And Henry says, oh, he says, oh, you got paint on you. The guy's like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't even realize it. And Henry's like, hold on, I got to add it to my picture. And then he did a little dot in this black square that he had. So it looked pretty funny. I'm going to have to go back and watch it. But
Then, like, as they're painting, they're flashing up the colors, quote unquote, that they're using so you can paint along.
Okay.
And one of them is like coffee black, And it's Henry Shorts Black or something like that.
Well, I know at one point Henry tells the guy, they talk about having friends, and Henry says, well, I don't think you have any friends. And the guy's like, no, I don't. My friends are these colors. And he's naming all the colors. This is Judy. This is Beth. This is, you know. I'm like, okay. it was pretty funny.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah. Oh, really something good. I forgot to tell you guys. Oh, I'm sorry. I guess this could be a part of my metal fix too. Snowy, you may remember, this happened during the Labor Day weekend. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. You remember how I was telling you, well, Lord Dying. You remember Lord Dying, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How the original drummer is friends with my stepdaughter, the oldest.
Right.
Well, he came to my house again.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, because he was in town. He lives in Portland, Oregon. But mm-hmm. he came over mm-hmm. here to come visit my stepdaughter and be on a little vacation, and they came to my house for Labor Day. So I hung out with him and stuff, and he's got such an interesting life. It's crazy. He knows everybody. No, he knows everybody in the scene and stuff. So, but yeah, we agreed. He's got this new project that he's putting together, and that's unsigned, and he says it will remain unsigned. He doesn't want to go the record label way anymore. So. As soon as they have something to promote, because they're getting ready to start recording soon, they're going to do an EP. So I told them, hey, you mm-hmm. want to come on our indie spotlight, dude? You're more than welcome.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That'd be awesome.
His name is Jonathan Reed, for anybody right. who's running, the original drummer of Lord Dying. So, yep.
Right on, right on. Well, yeah. we look forward to it.
Yeah, that happened so long ago, like a lifetime ago after this hurricane. I, I just popped into my head for some reason, so.
Ah, well, right on.
Yeah. So what you got, Snowy?
Right on. Myself, I kind of hit the record stores today, and I hit the newsstand as well. I got the new issue of Decibel in my hot little fist right now, and I want to give them the horns and a shout-out to them once again for having the set, okay, to put an artist like Mirker on the cover. Okay, because it's not like well, once again, like I mentioned on the show a couple episodes ago, like their last month issue had Wolves in the Throne Room on the cover. And now this time around, you know, instead of a bigger name, they kind of took the chance and once again threw out like this really talented artist that's just making waves within the underground and all that. And they might be forsaken sales for art.
Mm-hmm.
And that always gets the big horns up, you know, from old Snowy here. And it's just an amazing issue, including a little write-up on Winnipeg's own Propagandy as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And another thing I'm looking forward to getting into this issue this weekend, because they also got some stuff on the band Venom Prison, who we've played on this show recently. Their latest record on Prosthetic is just, it's fucking killer. And they're all over the underground. They're all over the underground press right now. Like they've been on the cover of a recent Metal Hammer. And like they're in this latest, their latest Decibel, and they're just popping up and Krang as well. They're popping up all over the place. This band, they're fucking on fire. They really are. And like, I'm kind of taking pride in the fact, no, they weren't an indie spotlight that we discovered or anything, or, you know, make our little claim to. But the second the record came out, the second Prosthetic put it out, like, we were all over it. We were the first, damn it. once again, everyone's jumping on Radioactive Metal's coattails and all that. But
yeah.
Whether they know it
or not. Whether they know it or not.
That's right. That's right. As well, I'm going to you got this kick-ass creature feature that we want to get to, so I'm going to kind of wrap this up with a little trip to the record store today, and I kind of got a quick lesson in music store etiquette.
Oh.
Okay, because I had some stuff that I wanted to listen to, and, you know, when you go into record stores, they have the public... you know, where you can listen to your stuff before you buy it,
mm-hmm.
where they have public stereo systems and all that. Okay, I found this cassette of this grindcore band called Cannibalism. Hadn't even heard it. Normally, you know, I'll take a chance on a cheap cassette and all that. But okay, you know, I'm gonna give this one a spin. Something was telling me, you know, give this one a spin. Fine. Well, there's this fucking guy. He's using the public listening system and all that. Okay, fine. I go about and I look around some more. I go back. He's still listening. Okay, fine. Go back, back and forth. Okay, dude, you know what? Like, fuck, there's other people. How long does this take? I'm getting impatient now.
Yeah.
You know, other people might be interested in using that. Like, are you listening to the whole fucking album or what? Like, oh.
He really wanted to make sure he liked the album.
Oh, God. Yeah, but see, when I do it, it's like, a, you know, 30 seconds each song.
Yep.
Like, if you don't know by that much, well, okay, you're just jerking off to it, you know, like, fucking buy it and then just, like, fuck, man. Like, oh, like, you know, it's just record store etiquette. You know, and so finally he's done. I want to kick him out. I wanted to take him outside and beat the shit out of him in the parking lot, but he's finally done. And I go up to the clerk. I say, okay, I would like to listen to this, but it's a cassette. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now I see that it's like brutal grind, and I got a fair idea what it sounds like, but something's telling me that I should listen to this first. Okay.
All right.
Okay. We go to set it up. The public one, there's no cassette on it.
Okay.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, fuck. Okay.
I see where you're going.
So yeah. What are we going to do? Well, they go and they look at the private one behind the counter, like for the PA, like for the whole store to listen. The first one doesn't have a cassette, so they got to pull out the second one. Okay, and they got to use that one. And I'm just, so they're going through all this trouble, and I finally said, okay, you know what? I'm going to apologize in advance to you guys because you're going through all this trouble. I got a fair idea to what this cassette sounds like, but I think I should listen to this one first. And we're, you know, if this sucks, I'm sorry, you know, I'm not going to pick it up, but you know, thank you so much for your effort. They put it on, I got about 30 seconds into the first song. And like, I love brutal grind, but when the production is so bad that it's just unlistenable, and this was just, I'm like, fuck, okay, no, I can't.
take it off.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Let's not subject everyone in the record store to more of this garbage, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of joking around with the clerks afterwards, saying, now you guys are going to go home, right? And you're going to go, this fucking guy came in. He wants this fucking grindcore cassette. We had to do this, this, and this. That the fucking guy didn't even buy it. They got a real kick out of that.
Yeah, you kind of diffused it by having fun with them after.
That's right. Well, I like to think, like, how can you not have fun in a record store? How can you not be in a good mood? You know, and
how can you not? If you have assholes, that's how you cannot have fun.
Well,
same thing in a comic book shop when I used to work there. Just have one asshole show up. That's how you don't have a good time working in the shop like that.
That's fair.
Well, you know what? When I was doing the Warren Music Shop, I never had a problem with anyone.
Oh, yeah, because it was a metal store, so you had all the cool people coming.
That's right. Yeah. But what I did pick up is Winnipeg has this cool unsigned band. They're called Occult Hand. Occult spelt with a V.
Of course.
Okay. And yeah. And they're the type of band that if you love death metal, you'll love this band. You like grind, you'll love this band. You like death doom, you'll like this band. Honestly, Relapse Records, okay? Occult Hand out of Winnipeg. Their new EP, Not Everyone Deserves a Happy Ending, is out. And I picked it up on cassette. they had vinyl, they had CD, and you know what? I'm gonna go for the cassette because I still wanna check all that shit out. So, yeah. That's it for my metal fix. I was kind of thinking that I kind of tapped Occult Hand for a indie spotlight tonight, but I don't think we're going to get it. So if you guys don't mind, I do want to play this band because, like I said, they're really fucking good. This is Winnipeg's Occult Hand with Long Live the New Flesh.
Time for the creature feature, this week's creature feature. And we have an awesome one. Our guest this week is Trevor Sternad of the Black Dahlia Murder. His second appearance on the show. If our longtime listeners may remember, I spoke to him, I think, about a year ago when the Black Dahlia Murder came to Orlando and they were doing a short tour where they were playing the Unhallowed album in its entirety. Mm-hmm. So I got to see him at that point. I got to take some pictures and stuff. And so that was pretty damn awesome. But this time around, he was doing the press junket thing over Skype for their new album that's coming out early October. We actually say what the date is in the interview. But the new album is called Nightbringers. So we discuss a lot of that. The album and stuff. We discuss artwork and how, because to me, Black Dahlia Murder, whether it's t-shirts, albums, they always have really fucking cool artwork.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and,
for sure.
And we really get into the artwork at one point, and I tell him how disappointed I was for one album cover, and you will hear the reason why he said that album cover was not up to par and why they picked the cover that they did pick for that album. And we're kind of all over the place. We talk about his vocal style, how he does the highs and the lows. We talk about that. So it's a really cool talk. I one thing I have to say is that I think I spoke to him about a couple days before my birthday, which was like a week ago at this point. And exactly 1 week after me and Trevor spoke, I was on Twitter. I was looking at what was going on, you know, and the Hurricane Irma was coming. And then I see a tweet from him, and he says, "Yep, your boy is in Mexico and just lived through an earthquake."
Oh,
wow.
Because do you guys remember that? Just before Irma hit, Mexico got hit by an earthquake. And they had a hurricane coming, too. They had a different hurricane coming also at the same time. And so I was like, holy shit, you know. And then a little later he tweeted, he said, "Apparently I'm one of the only two people. I'm one of two people that didn't get out of the hotel when the earthquake hit. Oops." So that's what.
Wow.
Yeah. So he had a hashtag like life lessons or something like that. So yeah. So of course we don't talk about that in the interview because it happened a week after we talked. But I just thought that was kind of hilarious in a way, but man, scary at the same time. You know, an earthquake. Shit. Whew, hurricanes are bad, but an earthquake that could just open up the earth and you just never be seen again. You know. So without further ado, man, Trevor is an awesome guy. He's super fun to talk to. If you get a chance to see him at a show after the band plays, go talk to him, go hang out with him, go buy some merch, because Black Dog Murder is fucking awesome. So here it is, here's my chat with Trevor Sternad of the Black Dahlia Murder. Trevor, let's start with the new album. It's called The Nightbringers, and it comes out on Metal Blade on October 6th. I love the title, first of all. So what's the inspiration behind the title?
It's basically like the embodiment of a long-running theme in the band's lyrics about, you know, I always see metal and death metal in particular as being a villain's music, you know, a villain of normality, a villain of religious thought, And you know, so to me, it's a vehicle for freedom, for self-reliance, and for fearlessness in life. And you know, it's definitely been a recurring theme. You know, we talk about night a lot and existing at night, and a lot of vampiric themes, which are also, you know, tied into the nightlife. So it's definitely a statement about, you know, everything that we've been backing up to this point, really.
Okay, so is this a concept album in any way, shape, or form? Or?
Yes and no. There's a couple nods, you know, to the recurring theme, really, but I wouldn't call it a concept record. But the title track obviously deals with it, and the song "Kings of the Night World" is also very much the same kind of vein. So it's kind of like having two title tracks. But I wouldn't say, like, by and large, that it's a concept record.
Okay. You know, when I first saw that title, "Kings of the Night World," I'm thinking, what, are they playing a cover of Kiss?
Yeah, that's what our manager said too. The Kings of the Nighttime World. He's like, I got that Kiss going, right? I'm like, yeah, I guess so.
Well, I'm a huge Kiss fan, and I'm a huge fan of yours. So, if
nothing's wrong with Kiss, man. I'm down with Kiss.
So,
Dressed to Kill's the shit. That's my shit.
Oh yeah, that's my favorite for sure. Oh man, that's awesome. So, this is album number 8.
Crazy, right?
I know.
Even that in itself is a shock to me. I mean, I remember when it was just my dream to make one legitimate album, you know, mm-hmm. and just so I could have it kind of in my hand and show it to my folks and be like, look, guys, you know, to have one, to at least make one album with a band, you know, and have like a real product and a real CD. And, you know, just something I could have personal pride in. And it's gone, I mean, so far beyond that. And, you know, each album seems to be on an upward trajectory for us, you know, still. So there's still so much excitement from our camp to see where we can take this entire thing, you know. And when we got signed, we, you know, Brian and I, we're still the two original members. You know, we made a pact, basically. We're like, all right, let's quit everything in life and go 10,000% in this direction and just take it to the utmost hilt. You know what I mean? So that's what we've been doing. I mean, we never say no. There is, the word no does not exist in the Black Dahlia's catalog. You know, if there's a place to go, we'll be there. If there's a tour to be had, we'll do it. You know, just constant movement.
Okay, gotcha. And like I was asking you earlier before we got cut off, you guys have been very consistent with an album every 2 years. Is that just a coincidence, or is that just how you like to do it?
Now it's just part of the deal. Like, we've done it so long like this, but, you know, we realize it's a pretty accelerated way to do things, you know. And we don't allow ourselves a whole great deal of time to write, or, you know, we don't have that much time off the road necessarily either. But you know, it was an attempt to keep, just to stay relevant and to stay ever present in people's minds, you know what I mean? To always have something new coming out on the horizon. Mm-hmm. You know, and with each album cycle, it's kind of a rebirth in a way. You know, there's new tunes to be excited about, new merch, new artwork, new tours, opportunities, and everything. So
gotcha.
It's kind of a reaction to, I guess, how fickle people are about music now. Just this internet era has kind of ushered in that kind of indifference. You know, you can have as much music as you want at all times, and things are so flooded with bands, you know, there's more competition than ever, I think. So it's just been an effort to stay omnipresent, you know.
Okay. Yeah. And I gotta say, I love the consistency, because I kid you not, about a month ago I was thinking, you know, it's been about 2 years, we're probably gonna see a new album soon. So
yep.
So I love it. I absolutely love it.
Clockwork, man. Well, that's cool, man. I'm glad to hear you say that. I mean, that was the idea, is to hopefully be a consistent band, and to be hopefully now by the 8th album, people know we're not gonna do any U-turns. You know what I mean? Do anything. You know, like, we wanted to be one of those bands like Cannibal Corpse that, you know, is dependable, that's going to stay the course, that's going to, you know, do their best to make a quality album for the fans. And you know, that's 8 albums, you know, in, it feels like that we are that, I hope, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And that's a comparison that I've made, you know, on the show, you know, that I compare you guys kind of to Cannibal Corpse, because, you know, they're consistent and you know what you're getting. And that's awesome.
Right on, man. Yeah, that's, I mean, they're definitely one of our biggest influences for sure. And, you know, we saw when we were coming up, we were thinking globally and we were thinking long term right from the beginning. You know what I mean? Not just to be a flash in the pan, but to hopefully, you know, stake our claim and be able to stay around. And, you know, I feel like I've seen a couple generations come and go, and I've seen a couple trends come and go in this time, mm-hmm. you know. And when we play shows now, I talk to kids in the crowd, they're often half my age, and they look at me like I'm an old wizard, you know what I mean? And it's funny. I've grown up on the road, basically. You know, there was a time when that was one of the selling points of the band, was that, oh, look how young these guys are. You know, they're going so fast and they're so young and cute. You know?
So how does that make you feel though? When somebody, you know, like you said, they look at you and they like you're old. I mean, did you say, hey, I'm not old?
But, you know. I said, hey, I'm not old. I just drink a lot. well, you know, I'm 36, so that's debatable actually. But, I don't know. I'm flattered that, you know, that they still want anything to do with us and that, you know, young fans are still coming into the band. And, I see that there's bands that we've influenced, you know, a generation of young bands taking influence from us. And that's just super flattering too. You know, it's, mm-hmm. To me, it means this thing is here to stay, you know?
Gotcha. Now you were talking about the writing new music earlier, and what's the process with you guys when you write music? Does somebody bring a full song, or is it like you guys jam and then you put songs together? How does it work with you guys?
Well, we're pretty spread out now, so we don't really practice like a normal band would. You know, the drummer is in the practice space all the time, you know, doing his upkeep and shit, mm-hmm. and everybody kind of does their homework at home now, but. We're writing with Pro Tools. We're writing by the time I usually get handed a whole song or a big chunk of a song from either guitar player, and it'll have both guitars, bass, programmed drums that sound pretty decent. So, you know, we're starting with a pretty high quality product compared to when we used to, you know, get together and jam and mm-hmm. try to force songs together. And, you know, I do miss that too, because I miss being a little bit more involved in the songwriting than I am now, because mm-hmm. We were all there in person kind of hashing it out. It was a bit more democratic. But then on the other side of the coin, I feel like since the guys started going to isolation to write, and I think that the ideas get developed to a whole, you know, another power than what you can come up with, you know, in front of your friends. And you know, I just remember us like all together jamming all these different things all at once, you know, and just making a bunch of turmoil and like not achieving anything most mm-hmm. of the days, you know? Yeah, yeah. So, it's a different style, but it's cool. It comes with, you know, it has its own strengths and stuff. I'll get a chunk of a song, oh, you know, from Brian, and I'll be like, wow, this is really cool. And, you know, he'll be like, what do you think? Go to the chorus here. And I'm like, yeah, sure. You know, or, you know, he'll hand me a whole song and it's just done. And I'm okay. Just like, wow. But it's exciting for me to write every 2 years. I feel like even though we're moving at such a rapid trajectory, we play so many shows and see so many bands in our travels and listen to so much music and absorb so much info in 2 years that when we do come back to write, it's different, you know, every time. I feel like it's new stuff, new ideas, more technical, maybe, you know, like I feel like we've grown a lot as players over the years and, you know, brought people into the band that kind of, we're aligned with that evolution, you know what I mean?
Definitely.
And, you know, it's really fun for me still, you know, after all these albums, like, when I was hearing these songs, I was just blown away with excitement. And, you know, I think it really shows in all aspects that we were all coming together and very excited about the material, very excited about Brandon's, stamp that he's put on things. Him coming into the band mm-hmm. was a huge shot of energy into the arm of this thing. So, you know, I feel like he's put a huge touch of his on this record, you know, and it's definitely unique for it. And I think it could be our strongest record yet. You know, I feel like it is. I feel very proud at this moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I'm sorry. Do you feel like it's harder or easier today to write music since you guys have so much experience doing it now?
It's I think it's easier, but I think that worries about it, you know, more anal. And there is a mounting pressure that comes. It's even more so with each record, you know, the pressure to keep delivering the goods, because we've had such an incredible run with the last few records. I think since Deflorate did well for us, but it was a slight misstep, I think, in the fans' eyes. And, you know, we returned really strong with Ritual, and we've just been hitting it right on the head, I think, ever since. And that's a lot of pressure to maintain a you know, what some people say is a perfect track record, you know, since then. So, but you have to look at it both ways. I mean, there's times where it's scary and, you know, you're like, oh, my whole livelihood is riding on this thing. And, you know, the livelihood of so many people that are involved, you know, our crew that rides around with us all the time. You know, it's bigger than just an individual thing now. You know what I mean? But also just, it's a good pressure to have. It's awesome to have fans waiting for what you're going to do, to have eyes on you, waiting for the next step. You know, that can be also really inspiring.
Very true, very true. So how's your voice holding up after 16 years of you screaming and touring? Do you have a vocal coach? You have a magic potion? I mean, what do you do?
I really, you know, there was times when I really worried about it a lot more, and I think I would stress myself out about it too much and maybe like lose sleep, because that's the thing, that's the vicious cycle of tour. When you worried about not getting sleep and then your voice is going to suck, then you don't sleep, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So I got to just kind of relax. And you know, I used to be more superstitious, I guess, about things, and kind of OCD about you know, warming up and doing all different stuff. But nowadays I'll just do a few screams, a few high ones, a few low ones, you know. I just don't think about it that much. I don't dwell on it that much. But I've also, you know, learned a lot more technique than I had, say, than 5 years ago, you know what I mean? So learning how to do more with less is still an ongoing process, you know. I think that it's just, I don't know, I'm still learning, you know. But there was a lot I took away from Melissa Cross's, you know, educational videos and stuff. She's, you know, done a lot for heavy singers. She has a DVD called The Zen of Screaming. And, you know, that taught me a lot about breathing, and that was a big turning point with, with me, and how rapidly I could kind of deliver things. And so, yeah, I have to thank her, you know, and definitely for that. And, but yeah, you know, I'm still growing as a vocalist. I think I still try to do new things and new voices and tones. And in the last few years, I've tried to actually slow down my delivery and make it more understandable. You know what I mean? I think it's even catchier if you can grab the lyrics just from listening to it, or at least some of them, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's right. I did notice that you've still slowed down a little bit on the cadence in some areas. So when you first started, you know, with the band, back those, you know, 16, 18 years ago, you know, like you mentioned, you do highs, you do lows. Did you start doing that yourself by necessity, or is it because, you know, because nobody else could do the highs or nobody else could do the lows, so you said, well, fuck it, I'll do them both? I mean, how did you develop your style?
It was really just in very much in tribute to Carcass and you know, the Necroticism.
I figured it was that, because I'm a huge Carcass fan, and the first time I heard you, I was like, these guys are into Carcass.
Yeah, that was definitely it. And kind of the freedom of recording and be able to record multiple tracks in the early day was such a turn on for me. I was like, wow, I can sound like Satan anytime I want. All I got to do is, you know, double it up here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even since the very first demo, you know, it was something I was doing. So I try not to abuse it too much anymore, to the point where, you know, we won't be able to reproduce it live. But, you know, I still love doubled vocals. I still love the duality of it. And, but yeah, you know, I was trying to do two guys' jobs in one, because it was, you know, Bill Steer was kind of the other guy. It was Jeff and Bill, you know, back and forth. And I just really like that dual nature, you know. And then Ben from Soylent Green and Goat Horror, it was a huge, huge influence for me at the very beginning of this band. And, you know, he's one of the best frontmen out there, you know. I love his voice. He's got that high low thing going too, to some regard. So that was, you know, a definite influence there. And, yeah, man, I don't know. It's just, Yeah, it's just what I wanted to hear, I guess, you know?
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. Because, you know, when I first, you know, started listening to you guys, you know, when Unhallowed came out, to me, you were the first to do this. I hadn't heard that before, you know, the highs and the lows. And I really thought there was two vocalists because on the album credits, it said, you know, you for vocals and then Brian guitars and vocals. I'm like, oh, okay, the guitars does either the highs or the lows. I don't know which ones. And then when I saw you guys for the first time, again, at the social, I was like, oh, it's one guy. Okay. And I was totally blown away right there. But, you know,
that's cool. That was a big misconception at first. And, you know, a lot of people thought either just hearing it that there was two vocalists or, like you said, that Brian did a lot. You know, but his voice on the record, too, but it's just not nearly as prominent, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And but he's definitely been my dude. He's the one that picks up the slack and does the doubles with me live in the cases where we need to. And you know, he does a good job. I'm definitely stoked to have him backing me up.
Oh, there, yeah.
You know?
Definitely. So just take a little left turn here. Something I've always wanted to talk to you about is artwork, album artwork, and T-shirt artwork also to an extent. Who did the art on this album for you guys?
This new one is handled by Christian Whalen, a.k.a. Necrolord.
Okay.
And it is a return to the same guy that did Nocturnal.
Okay.
And it was kind of, you know, it was a nod to the 10th anniversary of the Nocturnal album and kind of to the first time we could afford actually legitimate artwork, whereas the first two records I still don't like what they look like. You know, we just couldn't really afford anything at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, you know, I take it very seriously. You know, I'm always in charge of the artwork and the shirts and stuff too are also my department, you know, so, you know, to me, the visual thing of the band is very important and I try to embody what I like about death metal, you know, what I liked about it coming into it, what I still like about it. And try to, you know, embody that for somebody that's maybe looking at us for the first time or getting into extreme metal. And, you know, because I realize that we've been a gateway band for a lot of young people, you know. So for me, it's all about the dangerous place. It's all about, you know, some kind of fantastical area that you depict on the album cover that's just a horrible place to be, you know, usually. That, to me, that's just such a classic thing, you know what I mean? Entombed Left Hand Path from 1989, you know what I mean?
Oh,
this is a very old thing in death metal, you know, so
yeah.
I try to kind of stay that course with what we do, and you know, I try to have a color palette that will define the album for 2 years, you know, and separate it from what we've done in the past. But, you know, usually I would go to a new artist every time in an attempt to keep the fans on their toes, and in a way, you know, returning to Christian was a wild card move, I thought, that people wouldn't quite expect.
Well, he's a great artist. I mean, that Nocturnal album cover is great also. It's beautiful artwork.
Yeah, man, it was definitely iconic and, you know, definitely cool. And he's such an iconic piece of melodic metal's history with his artwork. You know, he's been on so many incredible records, Dissection, At the Gates, you know, there's just Dark Tranquility, just tons of them, you know, so it's something old and something new.
Does he work on digital or is he working on physical, on paper?
Oh, it's all paint, man. And he's doing it the old way, cranking them out.
That's good. Do you have the original, in your possession, or
no? That would be cool. I've never had one of the originals from any of our artwork, but
oh man,
damn, that would be really cool. I saw like a picture of him painting it, you know what I mean? So I saw like the easel and shit, and I mean that was pretty cool. You usually don't even get that kind of a glimpse, so
yeah.
But damn, I'd love to have it. I wonder how big it is.
Yeah. There's a lot of detail in there, let me tell you. So.
Yeah, there's lots of red, man. He said he used like five different kinds of red, and, you know, he definitely went crazy on the red. And that was the idea, you know, like I said, a really strong color to kind of identify the album cycle, you know, so lots of red merch, lots of red lights and red video, you know, obviously.
Yep. There's a theme there.
Yeah, getting the crimson going.
Yep. So there's two album covers, though, that you guys have released that kind of stand out to me more than the others. And the first one is Ritual. You know, you were kind of going for like a book of magic type of thing, you know, which I yes. which I thought was really awesome and different, you know. But the other one is, you know, your second album, Miasma. And I got really worried when I saw that album cover. Because
I think a lot of people did, and I think that Brian Slagle from Metal Blade was one of them.
Yeah,
but you know, and it was different. You know, lyrically, it was different. It wasn't as dark of an album. It's a lot more personal.
Uh-huh.
And you know, I was trying to capture the exciting world of leaving your life to be on tour, and you know, to be a drunken maniac in the world of rock and roll. You know, and we had such a wild times out in Vegas, and it just seemed like the right kind of vibe. You know, I don't know mm-hmm. if it really came across ultimately the way that we wanted it to, mm-hmm. you know, and looking back, I find it to be something of a misstep, you know, but, you know, luckily it didn't drive us into the ground. Yeah.
Well, because the thing is, usually when a band goes, you know, because the first album on Hallowed was yeah, kind of, you know, death metal like, I guess, you know, cover. But you went for such a different style on the second cover that I'm thinking, oh shit, this is going to be bad. This is they're totally changed their music. It's not going to be what it was. That's what I thought, because usually that's what happens. Like, you know, when Kiss
right, yeah, it looked like it was going to have a DJ on it or something.
Exactly, because like when Kiss put out The Elder, you know, it was just a hand in the door, you know.
You're like, oh, this is bad. This is gonna be rough.
Exactly, and then Exodus, and when they put out Force of Habit, I was like, oh, this is not gonna be good, you know. And it wasn't.
Yeah, that Force of Habit is a very strange record.
Yeah. So I was very worried, but I was very happy when I heard it, because I'm like, okay, good. They didn't change, you know. They didn't change that much. It's all good.
Right. We definitely modernized the sound a good bit at that point, and. You know, but I think by and large, we didn't change that much, you know?
Okay, yeah. So going back to the current stuff, you guys are going on tour in October. You're going out with Suffocation, Decrepit Birth, and Exhumed on some dates, Necrot, and Worm Witch. So that's a freaking killer lineup, man. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah, that's definitely one I'm very proud of. You know, I have a big hand in assembling the lineups for our tours.
Okay.
You know, so it's something I enjoy. It's something I you know, I want to put together a lineup that makes me proud, where I enjoy every band. And you know, Necrot is kind of the wild card band on the bill, I want to say. You know, like they're just coming up right now, but they have such a huge buzz mm-hmm. from their debut album. And I caught them recently with Undergong, and I thought they were just so sick live. So I was like, all right, man. And let's do this, you know?
Yeah.
So I extending our hand to younger bands, you know what I mean? I mean, they're not younger in age necessarily, these guys, but, you know, they're a new band. And, you know, I want to create a package that's just awesome. You know, I don't want to bring bands that I think we can smoke on stage or something on purpose. Or, you know, that's kind of a weird concept to me. You know, I just want to make it like the best feel humanly possible.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to add to the show and not subtract to it. You know, you do want to bring some of their fans, or want your fans to discover them and help them out. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so definitely a give and take in that way.
Yeah. We've had Necrot on the show a few months ago, and you know, great guys. You know, that they're awesome. So you guys are going to be all over the U.S. Until mid-November. So is that going to be like your holiday break in mid-November?
Yeah, we'll be home for the rest of the year then, so that'll be nice, you know. About a month, maybe about a month and a half off, probably.
Okay.
And there's a tour shaping up for Europe, but I can't really divulge anything about it yet. It's still that sensitive area, but it's big for us. Definitely cool. We're not at the top of the bill, which is exciting for us. You know, we want to be support. We want to be on the smaller end of tours. We want to get in front of a bigger band's fans. You know what I mean? We're mm-hmm. still hoping for opportunities like that, you know?
That's very cool. Very cool. So where can your fans go to on social media to find you guys?
I'm very, very prominent on Facebook. If the fans want to reach out at the band Facebook, they will find me there, and I will more than likely answer your questions or laugh at your fart joke or whatever. You know, and I think the fans get a real kick out of that. But we also have a website, and we're on Twitter and Instagram. You know, pretty much all the bases are covered. But yes, Facebook is, I think, the strong suit of the band. I think that's where the fans really respond, and you know, they really get a kick out of that we're at the other end of that thing. You know, and it was a really easy decision to make. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't know who else that was going to do it. You know, and B, it just like it means a lot to them. You know what I mean? The fans like just get a fucking kick out of it. All you got to do is talk to them. They're people. They're cool people. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
People I enjoy. Exactly. Like-minded individuals.
Exactly. And it kind of breaks down the barrier of that. Oh, they're the band. Oh, they're never going to talk to me. You know, it's your people too. So, you know, so that's
right. Great. We've tried to break down that fourth wall, you know, not only during the show, but, you know, before and after with the, you know, we'll talk to anybody. We'll hang out in the crowd and shake hands and meet people. And, you know, we're just thankful to have fans. And I see how far it goes to be approachable, you know, and first and foremost, I'm a metal fan. You know, I'm here as a fan, and I think people see that. I think that they can, that it's made us, I don't know, you know, people see themselves in us and you know, like, I think that's what makes it work for in a lot of levels.
Heavy fucking metal.
So there you go. I forgot to mention before the interview, we played the title track off the new album, Nightbringers. Which again is coming out early October, so go check it out, go pick it up, and you know, go talk to Trevor if you see him at the show again. Like I said, so one thing I wanted to mention after the interview, Trevor tweeted at one point out of the blue. I see this tweet where he goes, "Worst interview question ever: What is the craziest thing you've ever done on tour?" And he goes, "I don't know, maybe shit 10 times in one day." So I'm like, yeah, you know, because Snowy, I know you like to ask that question, you know, sometimes.
Sure.
You know, so, and it's that's, you know, a very vague question, you know. So I thought of you, you know. So, but then I replied to Trevor. I said, "Oh man, I'm so glad I didn't ask you." That was the same day that we did the interview. That was later that night. I said, "I'm so glad I didn't ask you that question in particular," and with a little smiley face. But then I said, "But really, what is the worst thing you've ever done on tour?" With a smiley face.
Psych.
And he replied. He said, "Oh, probably when that one time where the trailer hitch snapped and rolled over."
Wow.
Yeah, with all their equipment in it. Yeah. I was like, "Oh." So yeah. So, but you know, I had to be funny. I'm a smartass. You know, what else can I do? So
you got to be. Yeah.
So there you go. So guys, go pick it up. Nightbringers. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be good. And so, something I forgot to mention at the top of the episode, you guys probably noticed that we did not run an 80s in the Park ad this week. If you've been listening the last few weeks, that's because, as we speak, it's supposed to be going on this weekend right now as we speak, but it's been postponed to February because of Hurricane Irma. So and the organizers have said on Facebook that 19 of the 20 bands that had agreed to play will be at the will be there in February. So they did not say which band said they couldn't make it, but you know, who knows, you know, prior engagements, who knows. The thing is that they're doing it like right on the heels of there's a rock and roll cruise happening, a rock cruise happening, and basically the bands are going to getting off that cruise, and the ones that were on the cruise are going to go straight to Cocoa Beach to go play at this thing, which a lot of bands do that when they book these cruises where they go play on the cruise. When they get back to Florida after, they'll book a mini tour of Florida. You know, they'll go and play some shows as they head back home. You know, so that's what's happening. It's happening. I think it's like mid February. I don't have the dates in front of me, but we will let you know. You know, we'll do some ads again, and you guys will know exactly when it's coming, when it's time. So,
All right, look at that. Now that's the rock and roll life. We're going from one cruise, and then the next gig. The show at Cocoa Beach. Must be rough. In fucking February, when I'm going to be freezing my ass off up here. But I'm not complaining because I got to get the hell out of here because I'm going to go live the rock and roll lifestyle myself right away. So.
You know, Snowy, it's chilly in February. January and February are the coldest months in Florida.
Oh, but you know what? I've already been saying with everything that you've gone through and all that, everything that Corinne's gone through and just Florida's gone through, I've already said to a metric shit ton of people up here, come wintertime, don't bitch about the cold in front of me because I'll just go ballistic on you. Like, because just,
Just because you said that, I will.
Well, you've earned it. You've earned it.
Oh, you mean you were telling your friends not to bitch about the cold.
I was telling, yeah, don't bitch about the cold. Because I have friends down in Florida that, yeah.
I thought you meant me and Corinne, if we bitch about the cold in February, that you were going to go ballistic.
Oh, when you guys start, I just kind of just tune you out.
Roll your eyes.
So, yeah. So, but like I said, I got to get on out of here. If there's anything else?
Nope.
What do you want to go out on?
I think we're going to go out on one of my all-time favorite songs by the Black Dahlia Murder, and it's off the first album on How. Then the song is Funeral Thirst.
Right on. So in the meantime and in between time, that's it. This has been a murderous episode of Radioactive Metal. I'm Snowy White.
This is Rock.
And this is Aaron.
Signing off.
RadioactiveMetal.org or go to iTunes for past episodes and write a review. Listen to us live every Thursday night on PureRockRadio.net. You can also listen to us on Stitcher.com, TuneIn.com, Google Play, and all the other podcast aggregators. You can purchase the music featured in this episode by going to RadioactiveMetal.org and clicking on the episode link. Leave us a voicemail. We want to hear from you. Call 321-80-HEAVY or 321-804-3289. We may even play it on the show. Email us at radmetal666@gmail.com with suggestions or for indie spotlight submissions. Follow us at facebook.com/radmetal. twitter.com/radmetal666 and instagram.com/radioactivemetal. This has been a presentation of Radioactive Metal. It's not metal unless it's radioactive metal.